matter what people say. We got it going on.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Happy Sunday, and welcome back to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host, and as always, I hope you guys had a wonderful weekend, especially those of us who are living in the NYC. I hope you guys stepped out of your offices, you stepped out of your homes this weekend. It's January, and it's supposed to be one of the coldest months of the year, but for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a blessing, I don't know if it's a curse, I don't know what's about to happen, but it was literally 60, 65 degrees this weekend. Like, I wore a light coat out of my house. Like, I left the house in a light coat, and I still felt like I was hot. So I did enjoy both days I was out in these streets. I was able to, you know, be out here and mix and mingle and do what I needed to do without having to have, you know, my boots and my big coat on. So I thoroughly enjoyed this beautiful weekend. My son went to the park. Great time. However, a part of me, as much as happy as I am to have experienced this wonderful heat wave in the middle of winter, a part of me is a little weary as to what is to come. I am pretty sure, mark my words, that a blizzard is on its way, or some sort of weird hurricane tornado situation. Now, I'm not calling these, I'm not trying to invoke the spirits of tornadoes and hurricanes, but you guys have to be wondering the same thing. Like, what is about to happen? Because it's not, it does not get 65 degrees the week of January, like 10th, 11th. Like, that just doesn't happen. So I don't know. I'm enjoying it, but I'm also preparing. I think I'm about to go in, get some canned foods and stock my kitchen up just in case something goes down, because I feel it. I don't know. I've been low key asking for a blizzard for the last couple of weeks, only because I would really like to just be locked into my, you know, in my apartment for a couple of days, just, you know, getting my creative stuff flowing, and not having to report to work. So I've been low key praying for a blizzard to kind of, you know, stop the public transportation. I know I'm selfish, because there are some of you out here, rain, snow, sleet, hail, whatever, you still have to make it to work. But for me, I mean, I'm just being honest. So I don't know. I don't know if a blizzard is coming. I don't know if a hurricane is coming. But for those of you who have been like side-eyeing climate change reform and all this other stuff, I really hope that the 65 degree, you know, summer and winter kind of opens your eyes. Like, there's definitely something going on. Climate change, I believe that it's real. And I believe that we need to do a better job of taking care of our planet, or else I don't know what's going to happen, but clearly something's going to happen. I think that we do definitely need to take it a little more seriously. And I think the reason that a lot of us are kind of like, on climate change reform and whatnot, and we think it's just a whole bunch of, you know, extreme environmentalists who are just off their rockers, is because it's a lack of education. You know, we tend to side-eye the things that we don't know. So hopefully sometime this year I can get a climate change expert or a lobbyist or of some sort to actually come on the show and explain what this climate change reform is and what it actually means, what it requires of us, etc. But yeah, that's my spiel with that. I will say though, definitely sending out love and, you know, positive energy to our brothers and sisters in Puerto Rico who've been experiencing, I think it's been maybe two separate 6.0 earthquakes that have hit Puerto Rico. Not really sure what the devastation is there. I haven't been able to follow it too much because I've only recently been aware that all of that was going on over there. But I feel like this temperature change and all of this that's going on, the fact that we are experiencing this 65 degree weather, 70 degree weather, I feel like it has something to do. It's all connected somehow as to what's going on in Mother Nature. We have Puerto Rico experiencing these earthquakes. You know, we're basically living in summer right now. All of it, I think, is connected. And so, but I definitely wanted to take the time out to shout out and send love and support to our Puerto Rican brothers and sisters who are really going through it. Like, they've just kind of had, like, I mean, aside from, you know, Haiti's always going through something, but I feel like Puerto Rico's really been getting it as well too these last couple of years. So really want to keep them in our thoughts and in our prayers. So I guess talking about natural disasters. So today, January 12th, is the 10th year anniversary of the Haitian earthquake. So many of you know that 10 years ago, a 7.0 magnitude earthquake struck Haiti, killing an estimated 250,000 people. The numbers, I've seen different numbers. Some have said 350,000. Either way, several hundreds of thousands of individuals died. And another approximately 300,000, I would say plus, were injured. And about 5 million people were displaced. And a lot of them are still displaced in Haiti. 10 years later, there's still tent cities, you know, erected in Haiti. So today is, you know, a sad day for a lot of Haitians and Haitian, what is it, Haitian supporters, because, I mean, a tragedy like that, like, you don't forget it. And it's, you know, you sit back and you're like, man, it's been 10 years, like, already. You know, it feels almost as if it just kind of happened yesterday. And so I wanted to take this time to, I guess, take a moment of silence for our fallen brothers and sisters, you know, who lost their lives during this Haitian earthquake. So today there are a lot of organizations that are out there doing different events to commemorate this day. I know yesterday I actually had stopped by an event that was put on by CapraCare, who is a nonprofit organization doing amazing work in Haiti. And they talked about, you know, what their plans are for the new year. They talked about, you know, what they've been doing. And they also talked about, you know, the earthquake and how they got involved, you know, pretty much weeks after the earthquake, how they landed in Haiti and, you know, delivered aid and assistance the best that they can. And so as they were talking about their involvement in Haiti after the earthquake, you know, it kind of reminded me of how I got involved in Haiti after the earthquake. And it's interesting because I was born here in the United States and, you know, to Haitian immigrant parents who didn't speak English. So that's why I speak Creole so well, because my grandmother wasn't having it. She wasn't learning English. So therefore, we needed to eat. We needed to survive. We had to learn Creole. But it's interesting because people think that I was born in Haiti. They think because, you know, I'm so pro-Haitian. I know some of the inside jokes. My Creole is pretty good. I know about all the remedies, the teas and all this other stuff. They swear that if I wasn't born in Haiti, that I at least visited regularly. And, you know, my first time actually going to Haiti was after the earthquake. My mom really was not. I mean, I know a lot of Haitians out there can identify that if you were born here, you know, depending on the circumstances of why your parents left Haiti, a lot of us were not going to Haiti every summer. We were not going to Haiti every year. You know, I now have gone to Haiti, but there are still a lot of my cousins, a lot of my friends, other family members who have never been to Haiti. But it's like, if you were to meet them, though, you would never know that. So my mom wasn't about the going to Haiti life. In fact, she has not been to Haiti in almost 40 years herself. But I feel like when the Haitian earthquake happened, when the earthquake hit Haiti, it ignited a love for Haiti that, even if you already had this love for this country that you knew or didn't know, it, in a sense, like it the fire that it lit in you was, I mean, I don't even have words for it. There's no way to really describe it, but it wasn't just a ignition of or an igniting of a fire, of a flame. Like, I feel like when the earthquake happened, people who've never been to Haiti before, people who never had any plans to go, they just got this rush, this energy that was like, I need to go. Like, I don't know how I'm going to get there. I don't know what I'm going to do when I get there, but I need to go there. And that's what happened to me in 2010. I mean, I remember when I found out about the earthquake. It was moments after, you know, the actual earthquake took place. So I think about 4:53 p.m. is when the earthquake hit Haiti. I would probably say 5:05. I don't know. I was already getting a call or text message from family members here, like, have you heard the news? Do you know what's going on? And I remember I was a second year law student at the time at Fordham, and I was in the cafeteria, and I remember getting it. And I remember, like, locking eyes with a couple other people who might have just seen CNN. And it was just like, you know, some sort of like hysteria almost. Like, we were just kind of, it was like, we didn't really know what to do, but it was like a sense of like shock. But inside, I think everybody was panicking. As the news coverage, you know, kept going, and as I kept getting more messages from family members who were like, this is serious. Like, they, you know, they're reporting death tolls. They were showing images of like complete disaster, complete chaos, complete mayhem. You know, all I was thinking about is what's going on with my relatives who are there. Like, I actually still have relatives that I know and that I connect with that are on the ground. Like, how, like, what's going on? Nobody knew, like, the depth of what was going on. People were not answering their phones. There was no real way to communicate with the individuals on the ground. So for a period of time, you know, we were walking around not knowing if our relatives were dead or alive. And it was, you know, every day as we kept seeing more and more news coverage, we're hearing more and more about the death toll that's rising. It's 100,000, it's 200,000. It was very, very scary. And I feel like, again, like the Haitian community abroad, you know, there was this fire that was lit in them to respond in any way that they can. I mean, I had friends who were in nursing school who just jumped on a plane and was like, I'm going to go, you know, do what I need to do. I had friends who, you know, they spoke Creole and they were like, I can lend my Haitian language, you know, my Haitian Creole expertise. I'm just going to go. Like all you saw was just people picking up and going to give aid. And I feel like the earthquake was very tragic. Yes, it's still tragic. But I think that event ended up bringing a lot of Haiti's children back. A lot of the diaspora ended up going back to Haiti. Those who've been, those who spent 20, 30 years and never went, they went back and they tried to do what they needed to do. And so I think that, you know, when we're talking about, you know, milestones, right? So it's 10 years later, this would be considered, I guess, a milestone. And people look back and they think, okay, what has happened in the 10 years since the earthquake? What improvements have been made? Unfortunately, you know, I would probably say that maybe not that many when you really think about it in the grand scheme of things. The streets are cleaned up, you know, you don't see the rubble anymore, really. I remember when I went to Haiti in 2010, after the earthquake, I was able to organize a group of students from the law school to go. And I remember going and I remember looking around and I was just like, this is crazy. My first time coming to Haiti, it's like, it's looking like war-torn Kosovo. Not that I've been to Kosovo, but I'm a history enthusiast. So that term always comes up. But I just remember thinking, like, this is my first time here. And my grandmother's dream was for me to, like, know her country. And I'm here, and I'm here to address, you know, a crisis. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, what did these buildings look like beforehand? Like, it's like, it was kind of a bittersweet experience for me. I was there to assist, And I was, thank God that I had the ability to do so. But it was also like bitter because I'm like, wow, this beautiful country that everybody has told me about, like, this is how I'm encountering it for the first time. But I remember going, I remember doing work, assisting, helping, you know, the children in some of the areas that weren't in school and trying to create some type of like, you know, programming that would give them resources that they needed, the vital resources like food, water, things like that. But also creating some sort of like program that would still kind of keep them distracted from the tragedy that was going on. And I remember also that year, Legal Aid Society at the time, they were doing a lot of clinics because a lot of the individuals coming from the earthquake, survivors of the earthquake, needed temporary protective status based on the fact that there was an emergency crisis going on in Haiti. And I remember assisting a lot of these individuals in filling out the forms and in getting the TPS. And I was just like, it was still kind of surreal, just like how all of this was going on. And I remember Haitian American Caucus, they had done like a phone bank situation where we were trying to connect individuals here with their loved ones in Haiti just to make sure that they were okay, that they were alive. So there was a lot of like a lot of activity going on, a lot of humanitarianism going on, not just actually in Haiti, but here in the United States. And so going back to thinking, okay, it's been 10 years now, what's happening? What's going on? Has anything really changed? I feel like it's always important to reminisce on these types of events because it is 10 years and we are remembering the souls of the individuals who fell victim to Mother Nature. But I think it's also an opportunity for us to kind of reflect on what exactly has changed in these 10 years? What has changed? What has been done? What have the efforts really looked like? How effective have they been? How efficient have they been? We have a lot of organizations that service Haiti, or they claim to serve Haiti. A lot of organizations. Like I think Haiti is, if it's not the most NGO heavy country, it's definitely in the top list. But how has that really assisted in the future developments of Haiti, right? And I know that working in Haiti and trying to help Haiti or assist Haiti or whatever that, you know, whatever the phrase you want to use, because I know some people get offended when you say Haiti doesn't need help. We don't want to say help, whatever. But you guys know what I mean. When we think about that, it's like, for me, it's almost, you know, it's holding accountable, right? Holding accountable these organizations, holding accountable these people who are doing these things in Haiti and really putting together like a system. But I know it's not that easy because when we're talking about third world countries, developing countries, politics, you know, government, all of that serve as barriers a lot of times to actually doing the work. And so if you're not familiar with the way that things move in Haiti, if you're not connected, if you don't know how to get connected, it could be really difficult. But what I will say is that in the last 10 years, I have seen a lot of organizations. Let me not say a lot. I've seen several organizations rise to the task in providing, you know, assistance and providing, you know, I guess help and really working toward a sustainable Haiti, which I think is really what really should be the goal. It shouldn't just be, you know, how do we throw aid, but how do we help Haiti be sustainable? How do we create a sustainable Haiti? I've definitely seen several organizations putting in the work, and it's not about how do we help, I guess, Haiti. I think sometimes you got to break things down a little bit. It's not about how do you help Haiti in general, because if you look at it in that lens, and if you take it, if you take the picture, the big picture like that, it's going to be overwhelming and you're going to feel like nothing is happening because you're like, well, Haiti is not fixed. You know, how do we help Haiti? But if you take the approach of some of these organizations like CapraCare, they go in and, you know, they're very specific with the work that they do. And they're not, you know, they're very intentional with the work that they do, right? They work in a particular area. They have this particular program. And the idea is to, over time, expand it into other areas. But you want to make sure that what you're doing actually makes sense and it actually works. And I think that that's the approach that those of us who are now, you know, reflecting on, you know, the 10 years and because, you know, when you reflect, you start to wonder, well, what can I do? Or, you know, I've done some stuff, but it hasn't really been effective. How can I do better? How can I do more? And so as we're thinking about the 10 year anniversary, where we, you know, where we were, where we are, where we're trying to go, I think it's important to understand that I feel like when it comes to Haiti and organization work, a lot of times I think we fail because, again, we look at it as such a big picture. We have to do everything. We got to help everybody. And we're not intentional with the work that we do. We're not specific with the work that we do. I think the other issue is that a lot of times organizations want to be the organization doing X, Y, and Z in Haiti. Or you have individuals who are like, well, I'm going to be the one to bring power to this city or whatever it is. And so we're not doing it really for the people of Haiti, but we're doing it to inflate our own egos and to pad our resumes and to get status for ourselves. And I think that that's where a lot of these organizations fail, because when you're doing things for self, it's never really going to materialize into anything real, and it's not going to have any impact, and it's not going to have any future. So I think my advice when I'm thinking about, you know, this 10 years and I'm reflecting on it, even for myself, who has, you know, done work in the last few years in Haiti, and if I'm trying to figure out more strategic ways as to how I can continue to better help the effort. You know, if you're an individual who had a plan, even if you had an organization or you had an idea and, you know, it, you kind of like gave up on it because it's difficult to work in Haiti. I've been frustrated on many occasions because, you know, the politics and whatnot, they get in the way. But I would probably say to you to kind of reevaluate your goals, reposition yourself, and look to join an organization or partner up and collaborate with other groups that are already doing work. Now, if you have something that's very, very specific, then, you know, that's something, you know, that another group is not doing, you can still reach out and find out, well, here's my plan. Is there any way that I can have this plan under your organization's umbrella? Or is there any way that you could at least assist me in making contacts and, you know, really learning the system so that I can, you know, bring this program to fruition? Like for myself, you know, I'm developing, or I'm working on an idea that came to me not too long ago. It's continuing work that I've already been doing, but it's kind of taking more ownership on it. But I recognize that as a Haitian American who does not live in Haiti or spend any parts of her time in Haiti, there's a lot of stuff that I don't know. And the last thing I need to do is get got in these streets. So I reached out to Capricare, who I've already been working with, but I've reached out to them and some other groups just to really get a better understanding. Like, this is what I want to do. You know, before I go off and do this on my own, maybe I could actually just do it with another organization and partner up in that way, partner up and then, you know, do what I need to do. And so I think that it's just really important that, you know, when we're thinking about doing work, especially in developing countries, that we're cognizant of, you know, the not just the big picture, but also like the different steps, the different challenges that you might actually face. I think if we confront it in a way where we know that it's going to be challenging and we position ourselves in a way to better equip ourselves, I guess, to face these challenges, i.e. speaking to organizations that are actually established and have been working in Haiti for several years, not just like 1 year, I think we'll be in a better position to do the work and to, you know, I guess, fulfill the vision and the desire inside of us to go back and help our people. So with that being said, although today is a day that will live in infamy, with respect to the Haitian people and the Haitian sympathizers and supporters, I think that it's a time to, yes, reflect, yes, to remember those who we've lost. But I think it's also a moment and a time for us to check ourselves and reevaluate, you know, our position when it comes to being the children of Haiti, right? What have we done? And if we've done and we didn't do it well, or we, you know, failed in quotation marks, then how do we reposition ourselves? And if we haven't done anything at all and we've just kind of been like sitting around, and now you're feeling like, wow, like I feel like I need to do something. There are so many organizations out there that are credible that you can work with and that you can partner with. And like I said, CapraCare is one of them, that, you know, is doing amazing things in Haiti. And, you know, Haitian American Caucus, they have the school in Haiti. I'm on a board of Love and Hope Orphanage. We have an orphanage in Haiti that's been running for the last 9 going on 10 years, really making impacts in the lives of children who have no parents. So there are definitely many organizations that you can reach out to just to assist, you know. And money obviously is probably the primary way that you can assist these organizations. If you don't have the time to really help develop programs, donate your money. Like, I sponsor a girl to go to school, and I did that last year, and we're doing that again this year. And I'm hoping that I could sponsor 2 girls to go to school. And, you know, it really feels great to know that you're helping people, you know, like your brother and sisters, like my kinfolk. And so, I mean, there's definitely a reward in that. So that's my spiel. It definitely took a little longer than I thought. But I definitely did not want to let this day go by, or I did not want to not acknowledge the fact that today is the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of the, you know, Haitian earthquake, and that there are a lot of people who are still mourning, that are still in grief. I mean, I have friends who have lost siblings in the earthquake, so it definitely hits home. And 10 years is a long time, but it's not a long time when you're hurting. So my heart definitely goes out to everybody who is still, you know, mourning a loved one. And I'm hoping that, I don't know, I'm hoping that this 10-year reflection ignites or reignites another fire in us, in the diaspora, to go back and really figure out, like, how do we help in a way that's sustainable? Not just, let's just build this one house, let's just throw some food, let's just send a shipment of, I don't know, socks or whatever. Like, how do we really work and sustain the country that our parents are from, our grandparents are from, that some of us were born in? You know, being Haitian runs in our veins. Like, this is who we are. Like, we are the children of this country, whether we stepped foot on the land or not. So I encourage all of you to take a moment, whether it be today or tomorrow or next week, but really figure out, like, how am I going to contribute, you know, in this new decade to this land that clearly needs us? It clearly needs our assistance. So that is my spiel on that. So it's really hard to move forward. It's really hard to move on right after you have like a whole monologue in a sense on the tragedy of the Haitian earthquake. But moving forward, because it is the According to RP show, we do have to cut a break somewhere, right? This week we're back with our preliminaries. I do want to apologize for last week's show, though. Well, I don't know. I'm going to apologize because it was my show, but sometimes you just can't help what you can't help. I don't know what was going on with the sound. Like, I know that my brother was shooting some gems, and for whatever reason, like, I feel like the devil is busy in these streets. Like, I'm like, I don't know. I was so disappointed because people who know me know I have a perfectionist bone. And I'm just like, this was ridiculous. You know, it's like you didn't realize it until after it like airs. And it's like, man, there's no way to fix it. So for those of you who were kind of struggling trying to figure out what, you know, Fred Pierre was saying on the airways, I totally apologize for that. Hopefully we will have him back on the show at some point this year. I can't say that we're going to repeat that show, but we could definitely touch on some points. But I just wanted to get that out the way, because I know some of you guys were just like, man, this sounded like it could have been really good, but for whatever reason. Either way, it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
I've been on fleek, Jalit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word of the week is zoomer. So this was a random draw on Urban Dictionary. It wasn't a pre-planned. I have no idea what zoomer means. So we are all going to be learning together. Zoomer refers to the members of Generation Z and is a play on the term boomer, which refers to the members of the baby boomer generation. The term zoomer is also in reference to the fast-paced upbringings members of Generation Z are characterized to have due to the fast advances in technology and culture that has been happening around them as a result of the interconnectivity of the American and global populations because of the ubiquity of interconnected smartphones and social media. Now, if that was not drafted by somebody who went to Harvard, I don't know who did it. Either way, example, I can't stand those Zoomers. All they do is use their phones all day to play Fortnite and watch TikTok videos. So it's really interesting. Because on this show, I do talk a lot about the millennial versus Generation X. I thought there was a Generation Y. Like, who is the Generation Z? I'm a little confused. I got to do some more research on that. Who is Generation Z? I didn't even know we were on a Z. Like, I guess I'm wondering if Z is my son's generation, because he's like 13 and all they do is play Fortnite and I guess watch TikTok videos. So maybe the Generation Z is my son. I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. There's too much going on here. I was at millennials. I was at Generation X. And then I think that there was a Y. I had no idea that there was already a Z. But either way, I do find this to be pretty interesting. And I do find it to be pretty accurate. I find that the children of today, I guess in the Generation Z, I got to find out what year starts Generation Z. They definitely have been brought up a little faster, and it's definitely because of just the technology, right? Like the access to information, social media, all of that stuff has definitely forced them to be, what's the thing? I feel like it's created a fast-paced upbringing, but I do not believe that it's forced them to become adults sooner. Usually you'll hear the phrase, like, you know, when a child, I guess, is brought up in a home that, you know, I don't know, maybe single parent, maybe they had to like help mom out or help dad out or whatever. Certain life circumstances have forced people to toughen up faster than they needed to be and to be grown ass adults, you know, by the age of 15, when everybody else was playing outside and had no care in the world. You know, they were either raising their own babies that they had, or they were helping their parents and they were the adults cooking food, doing all this stuff. I find that, yes, the kids of today, or the Generation Zers of today, or the Zoomers, let me use the word, the Zoomers of today definitely have a fast-paced upbringing, but I do not believe that they are, that this upbringing is creating or is forcing them to actually become mature adults. I don't think that they are becoming more mature faster. I think they are even more childish than we were at their age. Like, you know, these children are 15 and they're acting like they're 12. Like, I think that the kids that are being brought up faster are not maturing faster. They're just more aware. they're just more connected. They're more in tune with what's going on. They have more exposure to the craziness of this world, but they're not maturing any faster. They're not becoming whole adults. So I think that's my take on that. But I've never used the word, I mean, this today was the first time I saw the word Zoomer. I don't know if I'll ever be using the word Zoomer. But I guess for those of you who are always looking to add new words to your vocabulary, to your urban, you know, your urban slang, here you go, Zoomer. So right now we are at our favorite part of the show. Well, my favorite part of the show. It's time for the big up of the week. Watch it. And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. Whoa. So this week's big up of the week is still kind of dragging out my earlier point, my earlier monologue. It's just a big up, honestly, to all of the individuals and organizations out there that 10 years later are still doing great work in Haiti. I know I'm redundant. I'm repeating myself, whatever. But I think it's really important. Consistency is key and consistency is king. And I think that a lot of us who have been watching, you know, looking to see what's going on in these streets when it comes to organizations and people lending aid and assisting, it's so easy to be a bandwagoner, right? When I know a lot of people, when the earthquake happened, ran down to Haiti and was like, yo, I'm helping out. But then you never saw them again. Like, they never went back to Haiti. They never talked about doing the work. It was just kind of like, everybody's going, I'm going. And then that was that. Like, that was it. It was an Instagrammable moment, a Facebook post moment, and that was that. So I really do want to go back and give kudos again. So all of the groups, all of the individuals, because it's not always organizations, but individuals that are that, you know, even the, like the churches that are still committed 10 years later, that are still, you know, sending food, that are still going down there and building homes, that are still trying to create infrastructure. I mean, we have organizations that are trying to bring electricity to rural areas. Like, they are still creating these programs that are still, you know, trying to better the lives of these individuals, and they're attempting to create these sustainable, sustainable systems. And, you know, again, like, 10 years is a long time, but it's a short time. But I feel like if you're still in the game and you're still out here trying and doing when many have like tried and dropped it or were doing and decided, I'm gonna head out. I definitely give you guys kudos, because it's not easy at all. Like, I know from personal experience, and I feel like it's important that, you know, those of you who are out there doing what you gotta do, know that, you know, at least somebody, somebody's watching and somebody appreciates the work that you're doing. And I'm pretty sure, obviously, the people that you're servicing are more than happy that you're still committed, because being committed is difficult. People don't like commitment in anything. And so, you know, being committed to an organization and being committed to doing humanitarian work, not easy. So kudos and big up to you all. So now, with every high, there is a low. And this week's Womp Womp of the Week goes to Lil Boozy. Boozy Badass. So some of you guys, because over during the week, these posts about Boozy was like, it took the internet by storm. And a lot of people were like, who's Lil Boozy? Who's this guy? I don't know these rappers. Like, I'm not into. I'm like, everybody have a seat, please. Have a seat. Everybody knows Lil Boozy. Whether you know him, but you've heard a song. So Wipe Me Down was like one of like the popular songs when I was in college, at least. So some of y'all was in high school, I don't know. But Wipe Me Down was, I mean, if you don't know it, Google Wipe Me Down, Lil Boozy. And once you hear it, you're going to be like, yeah, I know this song. And then he was also rapping with Webby, who's saying that Independent song, I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T, that song, he was on that track too. So I know, especially those of y'all who hit the clubs and the lounges, or who have, because I know some of you guys are saved now, hallelujah, but at the time you guys were in these streets, y'all know, I know that y'all know that I know that y'all know the songs. So either way, either way, why are we talking about Lil Boozy? Why is he the womp womp of the week? So it looks like last week, Lil Boozy was attending a Houston Rockets game. I think the Houston Rockets were playing the Atlanta Hawks. And he decided that he was going to, you know, show up in some drip, as the young children like to call it. So he was iced out in his neck, and he was wearing a red shirt sporting the Greek letters of the Black Greek organization, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated. So he had a shirt with the letters Kappa Alpha Psi. And I thought that maybe Boozy was a member of the illustrious organization. Shout out to the Kappas out there. I thought that he was, because I know that you have to be crazy if you sport Greek letters and you are not a Greek, a Black Greek. So he got in some trouble with the Black Greek community. And again, I am not a Greek, just to put it out there, because that's not why I'm talking about this. I am not part of the Greek community. I did not pledge anything. However, I have been surrounded by Greeks for the majority of my life. In fact, I have two of my aunts who are members of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. I have several cousins who are members of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, friends. I have cousins who are alphas. I have Qs. I have sigmas in my family. Like, they're all over the place. All over the place. And so for me, the one thing I know about this particular community is that they take their shit seriously. Like, seriously. Like, you can't even, to the point where sometimes I don't even want to joke around with some of them, because sometimes they can get a little sensitive. I feel like that is a community, if you don't really know how to, you know, don't bring up their letters, don't bring up their process, just don't bring it up. If you are not part of it, unless they invite you to make a comment, stay out of it, because it will not look good for you. It will not look good for you. So for me, I know that these people take their process, they take their letters seriously, as they should, because they fought for it, at least some of them did. But I know that, like, the level of seriousness that is, like, I guess the reason I'm so baffled by all of this, like, the fact that I'm even having to sit here and, like, really explain, I mean, to you guys, you don't know, but for Boozy, for little Boozy, to commit such an infraction, I am actually very, very shocked, because these people will mess you up on sight. Like, anything that even looks or smells like a disrespect, possibly, maybe, they are coming after you. And it's not even like it's just the Kappas that are going to come after you. Like, they all are going to come after you. The Iotas are coming after you. The Sigmas are going to come after you for coming at the Kappas. Like, everybody's coming after you. Like, the whole Divine Nine is coming after you, right? So with that being said, Lil Boozy thought that it was cute, that it was fresh, that it was hot or tough, whatever the words are, to wear this Kappa Alpha Psi t-shirt to the Houston Rockets game. And he even had the audacity to post on Instagram videos and images of him wearing the Kappa Alpha Psi shirt and using the hashtag Kappa Fresh. So at first I'm like, okay, this is a huge infraction, but maybe Boosie don't know. You know, maybe Boosie don't know. I don't know where his educational career or path took him. Maybe he didn't go to college. I don't know. Maybe he's not aware of the Black Greek organizations and the Black Greek culture and the do's and the don'ts. Because I could see, you know, if a young man came from like another country and came to the United States and saw a shirt and was like, ooh, I like this shirt, and wore it and did not understand, did not know, like has no frame of reference. I feel like if the Kappas and the Greek community were to come after that individual, I would have been like, y'all need to fall back a little bit, because homeboy just came from, I don't know, like Siberia, and he has no idea what a Black organ, like what, like he just saw Greek letters and he just thought it was Greek. I don't know. But in this particular case, Little Boosie knew better, because I had to sit back and I had to say, wait, Little Boosie is a Black American from Louisiana. Like, these Greek organizations came out of the Black Americans. Like, it came from America. Like, this is what happened. So even if he didn't go to college, like, I feel like by way of just being a Black American in Louisiana, somebody's auntie, somebody's uncle, somebody, you know, was part of a Greek letter organization. But okay, let's just say that that's not enough, right? Let's just say, listen, okay, just because he's Black American doesn't mean that he knows about all the Greek fraternities. Okay, fine. Well, the reports are now saying that Lil Boosie's brother, his kinfolk, is actually a Kappa. Which means he knows better, which means he knows the colors. In fact, Little Boosie's song Wipe Me Down is probably the number one Kappa song to hit the radio waves. Like, this is the song that whenever it goes down, they're getting in formation and they're shimmying and they're doing their stroll. So even if he, like, there's no way that he didn't know, because he was aware that the Kappas use, like, they stroll to his song. And if it is true, because, you know, the reports are the reports. People like to throw a lot of salt, you know, on these situations. But if the tea is true, if the tea has been brewed properly, Little Boosie's brother is a Kappa, which means he definitely knows better, which means his wearing of the T-shirt and the color is like a violation on all ends. And he probably should be dealt with. I mean, that's just me. I'm not out here promoting violence, but I'm just saying. So for me, I found all this to be very interesting. So social media, Black Twitter was going crazy. The Greeks were on fire. Like, literally, I was getting posts all week about this. The Greeks were not having it. They were not happy. In fact, they demanded that Little Boosie take off the shirt and stop wearing the shirt. And so Little Boosie's response was, I was, quote, I was in the mall looking for red and saw the sweater and it was hard. Yes, I know it was a Kappa sweater. I thought I would get love from wearing it, not hate. Calm your asses down, bruh. I was just getting fresh. Hashtag leave me alone. So there you have it. Boosie actually said that he knew it was a Kappa sweater, but because it looked good and because, you know, I guess he had that song Wipe Me Down, that he was going to be able to just be out here and violate code. But clearly that was not the case, because the members of Kappa Alpha Psi were not having it, nor were their brothers and sisters of the other organizations. So after receiving all of this heat from not just the Greek community, but I mean, black people in general who know, like, they're just like, why would you even do that? Like, why? Like, I would never do that. Like, why? He finally, you know, said that he wasn't going to wear the shirt again. I mean, I don't know, man. I usually don't do much reporting on what's going on in Greek life, but I really felt like this was just, it was just one of those things where it's like, you cannot do whatever you want in these streets, Little Boosie, who, by the way, is like 50 something years old. He's not a young stunner by any means necessary. He's not a spring chicken. He's like, I think he's in his 50s. I feel like I heard that he was in his 50s. He's not a young dude. He knew better. He knows better. And I feel like, Little Boosie, if you are wanting to become a member of Kappa Alpha Psi, I feel like, you know, find a grad chapter, if they'll still take you, because this stunt might have you blacklisted. You might not be able to to join the fraternity if that was your intention. I don't know. I don't know what you were trying to do, but you really can't just be out here in these streets doing whatever you want. Like, that just doesn't work out like that, especially with the Black Greeks. They will kill you. They will kill you. Literally, they will kill you. Like, I'm surprised he's still walking. I don't know. It just didn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't. This is just Black people just doing craziness. You can't be doing this type of craziness. Jesus, I don't know. So he definitely gets the womp womp of the week for that, because, I mean, starting controversy, like, there's so many things. And the sad part is, too, I believe, like, not too long before his, the Kappa shirt gate wearing incident, it was the Kappa's, anniversary. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me, like, how all this took place. I don't know, man. I don't know. Black people, we got to do better. We got to do better. Either way, so I feel like I did a lot of talking today. I talked about the Haitian earthquake. I talked about Lil Boozy. For whatever reason, he made the news this week. He made According to RP, because I don't know. There was just so much talk about it. And it's about the Black culture. So, I gotta talk a little bit about it. But I guess the last thing, since I do have a couple of minutes left, there's been a lot of talk. Everybody knows now. Like, if you don't know, then I don't know what rock you're living under, about the Meghan Markle and Prince Harry fiasco. And some of you guys might be like, I really don't care what goes on. But you do, because it's trending. My social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagrams, everything is talking about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. I feel like, although, I mean, it's their decision to do whatever they want, right? I can give two shits about what goes on in the royal household. The fact that they're stepping down from senior positions, yes, it's shocking, it's jarring, I get it. But, I mean, these people don't do anything for me, right? I think where I'm interested is this whole, like, narrative that Meghan is basically the beast, right? Meghan is the evil one, and Meghan is the one that's out here breaking up happy homes and breaking up royal families and all this other stuff. And it's like, it's not until this week as well that I found out that, the Brits were really going in on Meghan. I didn't know she was experiencing that type of so much discrimination. Yes, she's Black. And because she's Black, I figured that some of that would come into play. But I didn't know that they had likened her child to a chimpanzee, and that they said that she was almost straight out of Compton. And they were using all of these derogatory phrases and characterizations of her and whatnot. And so I had read an article, I can't remember where, but they were basically talking about how, why would she not try to escape this royal family, after all of the, discrimination and all of the, all of just the negativity that she suffered at the hands of them and of the royal parliament and of England and whatnot. Like, why would she not try to escape? What I can say about Meghan Markle is this: I'm pretty sure she's an opportunist. I mean, come on. Let's just be real. I'm pretty sure she's an opportunist, and there's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with seeing opportunity and seizing it by the balls or seizing it by their ankles or whatever the American sayings are. I'm not sure. Seizing it by its neck, whatever. I mean, yes, if she's an opportunist, she's an opportunist. Good for her, right? I mean, some of us are with individuals who are not doing anything for us. In fact, they're causing us heartbreak. In fact, they're seizing opportunity from us. So she's seizing her opportunity. She's doing what she needs to do in her life to get where she needs to get. Good for her. Do I think she loves Harry? I mean, I don't know. I don't care either. If she loves him, she loves him. She doesn't, she doesn't. But I feel like she's doing what's best for her. And it's the toxicity that's going on in the royal household, I'm sure is suffocating her. She's a Black woman married to the prince. Of course she's going to go through some stuff. And she's probably I don't want my child to be subject to this. I think what helps her out is that she has a very open-minded husband. Harry, here's the thing. I'm going to say he's open-minded because I don't know him like that. Many of you guys would say that he's maybe short a couple of chromosomes. I don't know. And so he's just kind of like, whatever, you know, I'll do whatever you tell me to do, Megan. And he's kind of like a lackey. And maybe he is. I don't know. But he was also the captain, like the former captain of a British army. So he does have to have some sort of gall, in my opinion. I think my take on this whole Meghan Markle thing, because I only have a few minutes to share it with you, is that, listen, she and Harry have made an executive decision to do what's best for their family. That executive decision has landed them, you know, a lot of negative feedback. They've been ostracized to the point, I don't know if y'all saw this, the Madame Tussauds museum in the UK. Apparently, so at one point, all of the royals were together in one viewing room. I think maybe 24 to 48 hours after Meghan and Harry made the announcement that they're going to step down as senior members of the royal family and kind of become independent and split their time between, you know, North America and the UK, the Madame Tussauds team, or I don't know who it was, literally snatched the image of Meghan Markle and Harry, Prince Harry, from the viewing room and have put them in a separate viewing room. Now, if that's not petty.com, I really don't know what is. Like, okay, fine. You don't agree with the fact that Harry and Meghan are breaking away from the royal family. I get it. But you couldn't even let, like, you snatch them out of the same viewing room as the rest of the royal family and you stick them in the back of the bus? Like, come on. Like, I mean, the Brits are petty, though. The Brits are petty. And sometimes I just love watching it. The British are some petty ass people. I mean, y'all can say what you want to say. But if you've been watching and been keeping track of what's been going on over there, they are some petty ass people. And this move of snatching, because you got to use words like snatch so you could make it more more dramatic. They literally snatched Meghan by the hair and Harry by the ears, because I think he's the one with the bigger ears. Snatched them out of the viewing room and placed them at the back of the bus. And they placed them in a room near the storage closet. Now, I don't know if it's really in the storage closet, but you guys know I have to add drama for the effect. Snatched them and stuck them in a room that's close to the storage closet, the utility room, all because they made an executive decision to basically live their own lives, which I actually commend them for doing. I commend Meghan because I'm pretty sure it was her idea. Put her foot down and was like, listen, Harry, for the sake of our family, like, this needs to happen. And Harry was probably just like, you right, because grandma probably killed my mom. So, you know, I don't want the same for you. And I think we do need to live separate lives. I think we need to establish ourselves. And I feel like, I mean, I don't know Harry personally. I keep saying that because I want to make it clear. I don't know him like that. But from what I've gathered from the news, he has had jungle fever for a very long time. And I feel like he's always been the rebellious one. Or maybe not, maybe rebellious is the wrong term, the nonconformist. And so I think that he, you know, is doing what's best for his family. Now, if there's another ploy going on, there probably is. But I feel like there's so much talk about, you know, Meghan just, you know, Meghan is a homewrecker. Meghan is this, Meghan is that. Poor Harry. I mean, Harry's a grown ass man. You know what I mean? Like, he's a grown ass man who's been able to father children. So I feel like, you know, he's not doing anything that he doesn't want to do or he doesn't see as necessary to be done for their family. So with that being said, bravo to Meghan Markle and Harry, Prince Harry, for, you know, breaking off from their from the royal family and actually like making executive decisions for themselves and for their child. I mean, I just saw something not too long ago. I think it might have been from The Shade Room. I think it was The Shade Room. Let me see if I could find it. But I did see a post from The Shade Room about Meghan Markle already making coins and making moves. So apparently Meghan Markle signed a voiceover deal with Disney. Like, this literally like just happened, it looks like. So she's out here making moves and doing what she needs to do in, you know, in North America to be able to, I guess, secure their goal of being financially independent, which I am very sure they will be. I mean, these are people from the royal family. Whether they're still going to be the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, whether they're still going to be considered quote unquote royal officially, The world knows them as Meghan Markle and Prince Henry. They're always going to make bank. They're always going to have money. They can create like a million charities and they will all, like, all these charities are going to do well. People are going to pour in money. So I'm not even worried about their well-being and their financial status. But I really thought it was a bold move. Some people might not agree with me, but I think it was a bold move. And it's it's funny because social media, I gotta love social media. Because of this, a lot of memes have come out of this Meghan Markle situation. So I did see a meme the other day that, you know, Meghan, Harry, Prince Harry, you know, I can't remember exactly what it said, but basically what it was saying was that Prince Harry left the entire, like, turned his back on the entire royal family from for Meghan Markle. You know, he can do better for you, sis. And there was another one. Damn it, I'm gonna have to post them on my social media because these were too good. Basically, you know, a lot of us women are dealing with ancient niggas out here. Sorry, I had to get a little vulgar, but I mean, there's no other way to describe them without saying it like that. We're dealing with a lot of these individuals out here who ain't doing nothing with their lives, and they're trying to bring us down with them, right? And I find that a lot of times we accept a lot of these behaviors and things from these men. And we think that, oh, well, you know, we give them all these passes. Maybe they're busy. Maybe they had a long day. Maybe they're whatever. I will tell you that people will make time for what they want. That has always been a fact. Men will tell you that themselves. They will make time for what they want in this life. You have Prince Harry from the royal family making executive decisions that I'm pretty sure Meghan Markle spearheaded. He broke away from his royal family for his woman, for their family. Whoever it is that's not returning your text messages right now, you can drop them. In 2020, when a new decade, drop that zero. You got people making executive decisions, ruining their legacies for a woman. You have these examples that are in our face right now. If he's not returning your texts, you know what? Let me not be one-sided. If she's not returning your texts either, it's time to let go. Because this whole I don't have time business, you got people starting wars for people. Like, you can dead that person in 2020. The year just started. If you started off on the wrong foot, this is the point. There's still time. We're still in Q1 to get your life together. So if he's not texting back, if she's not texting back, and their excuses as that they're busy, then say no more. Just put them on block, put them on pause, do whatever you need to do, and get yourself somebody who is going to not only text you back, but who is going to ruin their legacy for you. That is what, okay, maybe not. I don't know. I'm being extra today, but whatever. So thank you everyone for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl Rita Pierre, your host, and I hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. But before, because I'm always remembering these things, the weekend is over. Before you have your wonderful, wonderful week, but make sure you follow us on Instagram, According to RP. You could slide up in my DMs. I answer questions there. Or you could send us an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you guys. And thank you to you all who've been sending me these posts. Like, sometimes this show would not be where it's at without your DMs. So continue to DM me these crazy things that's going on in these streets. I love them. I love them. I love them. But yes, with that being said, have a good week, everyone.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.
WJMSradio.com.
Download the new app.
Live 365. Listen to the show anywhere.
Anywhere, anytime.
Download it now.
Thank you.